Whoop whoop!
No whoop whoops, LZ, in Storrs, Connecticut. And you got to wonder if there's going to be no whoop whoops in other college football markets before too long. UConn's football program, and look, no one's going to get them confused with Alabama or Ohio State or USC anytime soon, but they are an FBS program, and they are the first to say, you know what, we're out. We're not going to do this. This is not going to work because of the pandemic. We're going to opt not to play football in the 2020 season. And we saw what was the Ivy League, Harvard and whatnot said, we're not going to do it. We're not going to have any fall sports. They did that a couple of months ago. Now this. And I know why the SEC wants to play. I know why the Pac-12 wants to play. But you just have to wonder if the further we get into this and the more they try to get going and the more hiccups and hurdles that they hit, if this isn't the result for more and more college football programs, if not ultimately all of them.
Yeah, you know, I know that you want to look at the program and go, well, you're 3-3 in bowl games in your school history. So do you really matter in football? Do you really matter? And, you know, there's an argument that says, no, you don't necessarily matter in football. But just as HBCUs were the first ones to start adjusting fall sports or even canceling fall sports, and people were saying, oh, well, you know, you're not impacting college sports, blah, blah, blah. What they ended up being was the first indicator of the wave that was coming. And then you started seeing everyone moving towards what the HBCUs had initially announced. So I do wonder if UConn's announcement is going to be very similar, where you have, as you said, the first FBS team to come out and say it's too risky to do football. Now that a team has come out and said that, maybe some of the other teams in other conferences may be thinking the same thing. And eventually, it's hard to rearrange schedules and match up with different opponents because too many teams have decided to pull out and the whole season collapses upon itself.
Well, and then there's the whole issue of the Pac-12 too, right? That you have players from the Pac-12 schools saying, we're not going to play unless a number of our requests are met and honored. And a number of those requests are coronavirus related. A number of those requests are just health and safety protocol related. And if you get, I know that it's been characterized as a couple hundred Pac-12 players, and over 12 teams, a couple hundred probably doesn't sink the league depending on, you know, how it's distributed. But if you get a little bit more than that and all of a sudden you have a boycott, now all of a sudden you have a major league that is tapped out. And all of a sudden the Big 12 or the Pac-10 or the Big 10 and all these other leagues, like the SEC and the ACC, the Big 10, they're going to be the last to say, we're not going to play. But another domino fell. I know it's an early one in UConn, but the Pac-12 is teetering, right? And maybe not just strictly because the schools are going to say no. It may be the players that say no, but it really doesn't make much of a difference who says no, as long as no is being said. And once you get a couple more of these, it's going to be really tough to have a college football season if you only have half the schools that are going to still try to play.
Yeah, the Pac-12 situation that you pointed out is really interesting to me for a lot of reasons. One, first and foremost, when you look at the demands, they're stretching across two different spectrums, in my opinion. The first spectrum is being the safety for the players. Mm-hmm. And then the second is the economic aspect of it and doing what they should be doing in terms of social justice and racial equality. The first part of it, the health and safety aspect of it, just took a major blow. A major blow, one, because you had a stupid response to it from the Washington State coach, but then you also got what's happening with Colorado State. Yeah. And the obvious disregard for the safety and what's best for the players on full display. I just saw there's going to be an investigation into the report now. We're going to see what the fallout is going to be. But that's a real ugly image to have with a coach being so dismissive about the safety of his players. And then when it comes to the social justice aspect of it, I mean, that alone should be enough to give everyone pause. That alone, because these young men, they're not falling for the, we're going to put together a diversity committee, we're going to issue a strong statement, we're going to shoot a video with some coaches and then keep it moving. No, when you read the demands, and then when you hear what they have to say about the response to the demands, a boycott is a real thing. These guys are organized. These young people are organized, and they're not playing. This isn't 5 years ago. This isn't, what was the little running back's name, Maurice Claret? This isn't that. This isn't that. You know, where some wild card is out there trying to change things up. And I think he was right, but he was a wild card. He wasn't organized. He wasn't thoughtful in the way he attacked him. That's the reason why it was so easy for football to get rid of him. But this isn't that. These guys are organized. They're focused.
And I want to go back to the Colorado State guy and the Washington State guy, the two coaches, the two programs that have basically told their players, hey, look, if you boycott because of social justice as the Washington State coach, then you're not a part of this program anymore. That's a problem in and of itself. But then you go to the Colorado State situation where they're saying, hey, look, if you're sick, don't tell anybody. You know, if you're sick and you miss time because you have to be quarantined, that could affect your playing time. These are the sorts of things that get people sued and get and have the plaintiff in these situations win the case. Because when this once this stuff is out there and you can make a compelling case for, look, I didn't want to be there. I didn't want to be there because it was unsafe. I didn't want to be there because I knew that they were not practicing the appropriate safety protocols to keep me safe. But I also know the coach told us, if I don't come to practice, I'm not going to play. I know that there are instances of if I decided I wanted to not play the season for social justice reasons, the coach told me they were going to get rid of my scholarship. They're going to tell me that someone else is going to take my place. Now, all of a sudden, you got a suit. I will never, ever expect these administrators to do the right thing for the right reason. I've just been around it too long. I've just been around it too long for them, and the money is too great for them to say, you know what, we're not going to do this because some kids might get sick. We don't know how this virus works. We don't know if we might lose one of our kids. I'm not taking the chance. I'm not doing it. Okay, that would be nice to think that that's going to happen. It's not. What might happen is, I don't want to get sued for $100 million at the end of this thing because we didn't have enough hand sanitizer and one of our coaches said something really, really stupid. That's going to be the thing that pulls the plug. And I'm not saying that that's where UConn came to or why they came to it, but I believe that it's a strong possibility, not just a, you know what, let's do the right thing for the right reason. College sports almost never does that.
No, college sports almost never does because there's too much money to be made for doing the wrong things. There's exactly. No incentive to do the right things financially anyway. So I'm not foolish enough to think that a head of a conference is going to do what needs to be done for moral reasons. I would like them to, you know, because you have a lot of people who have entrusted their children and the well-being of their children in the hands of these men and women who have come to their homes to recruit them, to play for them. You know, so I would like to think that they would care enough about the well-being of my child since you showed up to my house to take my child from me. Mm-hmm. But I'm also not going to be so stupid as to think that was the primary reason why you're in the position that you're in to begin with. Yeah. You're in this position because of money. You're protecting the money. And if the risk costs more money than the reward, then the risk is going to be handled appropriately. And I think that stands your point.
LZ, help me out with something here. I'm changing gears a little bit. If you were doing something,
okay, you won the snake draft already.
No,
all right,
it's fine. It's not the snake draft. We'll get to. I'll take my victory lap tomorrow. Woo-hoo! We'll do that tomorrow. If you were doing something that was so successful that you were deemed the best at something, if you were doing something that was so successful that everyone said, you know what, you're about to get hundreds of millions of dollars. You're so good at this. If you were so good at something that everyone is saying, you know what, he might be the best guy at the moment going, would you change it?
No.
Because Cody Bellinger did. I don't quite understand that he started tinkering with his swing at some point. He says now that he's gone back to what he was doing last year. But coming into the season, he started tinkering with some stuff in his swing and in his approach in the batter's box. And for the life of me, I cannot understand why a guy who just put up one of the great seasons in Dodger history, which, by the way, is not one of the great seasons in, you know, Florida Marlins history. We're talking about the Dodgers, for goodness sakes. And then you say, you know what? Watch this. I'm going to change some stuff. What the hell?
Tiger did it. Tiger did it. Tiger redid his swing even after winning majors, right? And then he had a slow start until he got used to it. I mean, it happens. It doesn't happen often, right? But, I mean, clearly something was wrong. Otherwise, he wouldn't have
Was it? Was it? I mean, the guy hit just because, 47 well, home just runs because you get, and won the MVP.
Listen, once again, this is the Christopher Columbus thing. Just because you accidentally do something doesn't mean you know how to do it well.
No,
because...
This was not an accident. Just, you do not hit 47 well, I mean, runs on accident.
No, but what I'm saying is that just because you are able to overcome your bad habits to be successful doesn't mean you still shouldn't necessarily address your bad habits. Maybe he felt like he still had some bad habits. Maybe the Dave Roberts or others looked and says, yeah, you were great, but you know what? This right here can undermine you. And so he's doing what's necessary to correct that. I mean, a lot of players, believe it or not, at least that I've interviewed over the years, Serena Williams has won. Roger Federer has won. Roger Federer has won in a whole boatload of tournaments and still tweaked on stuff because he knew he was getting away with certain things that needed to be addressed. And so maybe Cody, despite the offensive success, was made aware of or always knew that he still had a couple of bad habits and that he needed to address it. And, you know, it just took him a little bit to implement it into a successful way onto the field.
I'm going to let them get me out a few times before I start changing things. You know what I mean? I hear what you're saying. And Tiger's actually a really good example because Tiger was winning majors and said, this isn't going to last long term. I need to change it. And he did. And to your point, it took some time. And then that's when Tiger really went crazy and basically won everything he looked at for the period of, you know, 6 or 7 years. But in baseball in particular, it's so difficult. It's so difficult to have success at the plate. When you're going right, there's a line in Bull Durham, you know, when you're on a streak, you don't mess with it. And it doesn't matter why you're on the streak. You just let it run. If I'm coming off of an MVP year, and even if I'm thinking, you know what, maybe I have, I'll just make something up. I have trouble with breaking balls from left-handed pitchers. Okay. Maybe that's something that we need to address. But I'm going to keep hitting 320 and hitting my 47 home runs and try to do this other stuff until it becomes a problem where I can't do my job. I'm not going to live. And clearly he felt like that too, because he's already said, I'm going back to my old swing. I already have gone back to my old swing and it's starting to come around again. I feel pretty good. I feel like I'm swinging the bat. This is not a look. This is something I need to do for the long term. This is a, yeah, we're not doing that anymore. I'm going back to the old way.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I could certainly see that. There are plenty of shooters in basketball who don't shoot well from a textbook perspective, but the ball goes in. And so they keep shooting it that way. And it's hard to tell a guy who's getting success that what you're doing is wrong. It's hard. And sometimes the guy is right. Like, I shoot this way. I'm always going to shoot this way. And that's just the way it's going to be because I'm good at it. Silk, for instance, doesn't shoot a textbook jumper, didn't shoot a textbook, but it worked. Right.
Yeah.
So Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller.
Yeah.
You know, if it's working, I mean, if it's working and you feel like you can keep it long term, then go for it. Cody, whatever he was doing, someone told him or he felt that he needed to tweak it. And after a time, he says, you know what? I would much rather deal with the consequences of some bad habits that have success than try to correct these few little bad habits on the promise that there might be more success.
Let's hit home runs. Let's get on base. I like that. I like that plan. Let's win and hit home runs and get on base. Clinton Yates is going to join us next. That's coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. All right, Clinton Yates from the undefeated ESPN joining us right now. Clinton, good morning. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling well as a resident of Los Angeles, LZ. I got up this morning and very much enjoyed the weather. Just wanted you to know that. I live here.
I thought you were in D.C. for some reason. You're always repping D.C. teams and D.C. sports, so I just assumed that you were D.C. My bad.
I'm glad that still comes through, but no, I live here. So I'm well this morning.
Like, is this a recent move? Like, you've been here for years?
Yeah, he's deeply, deeply confused.
I've been here since March. What are we doing? My God, I thought me and LZ were friends. I told him on George's show that I was watching him on Spectrum Cable, which means I was here, and I've been watching him for months. I guess you thought I had that, I don't know, whatever that's called, VPN link to watch that in D.C., but I don't. Been watching it here.
I thought you... I thought you were here for a visit. I didn't know that you moved here. And if you moved here in March, then that doesn't even count because we've all been locked up in a quarantine. Don't act like you went out in the streets for years and I ain't seen you. You've been in a quarantine like the rest of us.
I mean, I've been kind of in the streets for years. That's why I eventually moved, but that's fair. We all have been locked up, and I'm thankful that I'm locked up in a place where it's 75 and sunny every day.
Not bad. Clinton, let's start right here. Let's start right here. I know that you're a baseball guy. What do you – take the Marlins and the Cardinals and put that in a separate category for a minute. The baseball that we're seeing, does it feel like Major League Baseball to you?
It does, in that the competition hasn't fallen off sort of as much as I thought. We haven't seen as many of the sort of taxi squad kind of situations that I thought were going to come about. But I got to tell you, Travis, my mind has been changed on this in one regard. I thought that the best idea was to just shut this thing down, give everybody service time, and just figure it out for 2021. I think we've seen now, though, that bubbles work. Meaning, if you bang this thing out and just say, hey, you know what, we're done here. But we're coming back in October with a bubble, and we're not expanding the playoffs. You know, that to me seems a little bit more doable than any of this other stuff that they're trying to figure out. Because guys running around the country just to hit baseballs out of ballparks does not seem smart right now. However, I got to say, I'm having fun watching it, but it feels weird. It definitely does, Travis. It does not feel like something I should be looking at.
Right.
I don't understand why the players in a 60-game proposition would have been so opposed to the bubble. And everyone that we've spoken to have said they don't believe that baseball actually presented the players with a new bubble plan once 60 games were decided upon. And if we don't finish the season, it's going to be because of a spread or a pandemic within baseball. Do you believe that's enough to make Rob Manfred ghost? Should he be gone because of the way he handled all of this?
I mean, my issues with Rob Manfred are sort of separate but equal, if you will, on some level. But this is one enough, I think, is grounds for dismissal. Absolutely. I mean, you've messed up the money if they can't finish the season, and you've ticked off everybody who's a fan of the game. So on both fronts, you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing. As for the bubble issue, though, I mean, you can go right on down five and look at Anaheim and see why they're not in that bubble. Do we forget when Mike Trout straight up said, I'm not going from a hotel to a ballpark and back. I'm just not doing it because of my family. I don't think that makes sense, and I don't think there's the risk. They took a huge hit in terms of their ability to try to push that through when the most important player in some people's minds in the game basically said, I ain't doing it, you know, which you have to respect at some point. I think the reason why it's different now, LZ, is because we see that the bubbles work. You know, I think there was a reasonable amount of skepticism in that because people thought, well, if we're going to do it, we might as well do it. Forget about all this bubble stuff. Now that we've gotten to the point that we might as well do it is clearly ineffective, I think that there's a little bit more understanding of what a bubble could provide, not just from a baseball standpoint, but from a safety standpoint. The bubble is the daggone safest place on earth right now. You know?
That Rob Manfred got this wrong, though, is not a big surprise. I mean, he couldn't get the Astros, who were caught red-handed cheating, right. Well, you know, and that's about, as a commissioner, it doesn't get much easier than that. Okay, I have guys that are aggressively cheating that altered the course of the history of my game, and we'll do nothing. We'll suspend a manager. We'll fine him some, you know, small amount, take away a couple of draft picks. And then you add on the backside a pandemic that no one had ever been before. If he couldn't get the easy one right, he wouldn't even get the hard one right.
Right, and that's what I meant by issues being separate but equal. I mean, Manfred's ability to adjudicate the various matters of the game that need to be handled just on the field alone and in the ballparks alone has proven to be unsatisfactory, if not completely unacceptable. So I'm completely with you here. I don't trust him to do this any more than I trust anybody in, I don't know, any administration from 1600 Pennsylvania on down through the state level to get this right. I'm turning on my TV. I see kids walking through hallways with book packs and no backpacks and no masks on, standing at their lockers in school. So America as a whole has pretty much failed on that front. But I do think that there is something to be said for reconsidering the first effort, maybe shutting this thing down after this week and saying we're coming back with playoffs and we're going to be in a bubble. If you want that, we'll take it. And I think people would like that. I genuinely do. And I think people would respect the fact that they retooled and reconfigured in order to get something right instead of just saying we told you so, which is apparently the American way now.
Yeah, you know, finger pointing, what are you going to do? So the Dodgers, our Dodgers.
Yeah.
None of their best players are hitting much above 200, and yet they're 8-4. What does this tell you, Mr. Yates? Or do I call you Venice Yates? Would you prefer to call me Venice Yates?
I know. Well played. What it tells me is that, you know, this is the best team in the bigs. You know, top to bottom. Like y'all said, y'all called him useless Joe Kelly. You don't need him for the bullpen to be any good. You stacked from top to bottom in the lineup, and certain guys aren't even doing that well. So, I don't know. I mean, you know, Travis, you asked me if I'm watching real baseball. This is kind of the weird thing about the everything, LZ, is that, like, yeah, okay, I'm looking at records. Okay, I'm watching ball, but, like, what am I supposed to take from these air quotes trends, you know, that are basically just little micro trends, you know what I'm saying, that really only involve basically three or four games at a time? I'm not really sure. So it's hard to say because there's nothing that stands out, not to me. You know, just a bunch of other bad teams out there trying to figure out it as well, and the Dodgers are more talented.
Yeah, the micro trends, like you're talking about, they are meaningless, except for not now. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. they would be meaningless in any sort of normal baseball season, but, you know, a little three-game skid that you have in the middle of this, it could sink your season potentially. So it feels kind of dirty to react to these things the way that we are. You know, going into the game yesterday, it felt like, hey, this is a pretty important game for the Dodgers. Last thing they want to be is in third place at this point, because they've played 12 games, but 12 games is 20% of the season. It's not crazy.
And it also indicates, you know, like, look, the pods are slightly for real. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't, you know, what do you even really know if you're only gauging the micro trends of one team versus another? Like, how quickly are you going to get caught up in thinking, well, this team's just bad? Oh, actually, turns out 60-game sprint, that team's pretty good. That changes week to week, you know? So it's difficult to, from a math standpoint for me, as much as it is from a sort of ickiness standpoint, to really give a lot of credit to what's happening in one particular case or in a particular series. But Dodgers look good. Thank God.
Clinton, let me change gears on you here a little bit. We've been talking about the Pac-12 player potential boycott and the list of requests that they have to the conference. Is this going to be one of those moments that we look back, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, as when college sports definitely changed? Because we've talked so long about, hey, if these guys just sat out, if they boycotted, if they decided not to take the field one Saturday afternoon, they could get the power away from the NCAA, and it never felt real. This feels more real to me. Is this one of those moments?
I think so, and for a couple of reasons. Number one, and this starts as much with the SEC as it does with the Pac-12. We saw that conversation, that phone convo that went public and was reported on, in which a lot of the players just came out and presented their case like normal, smart Americans, and just said, hey, this isn't good enough. We don't feel safe. And people responded to that, because so often, because of all the different things we've internalized about what we think about athletes, we tend to think they're either greedy or stupid or sort of speaking above, you know, getting too big for their britches, so to speak. We've come to see that none of that is the case for these college athletes. They know full well what's going on, and they're fully capable of expressing that in a way that oftentimes is smarter than the people who are in charge of what they do present their own cases. And so, for one, there's that. I think the general public has looked at athletes and said, these guys are actually pretty smart. They know what's going on. And secondarily, I think that there's going to be a weird sort of, you know, we talk about, and, you know, speaking of DC, LZ, we talk about paths to winning in terms of elections all the time. This weird thing here is that the path to winning, Travis, so to speak, is not one of, like, necessarily wrestling power from anybody. I think it's simply convincing, as student athletes, convincing the powers that be, like, yo, this isn't good for you either. You know, like, the greater good here is to shut this thing down, even if you don't understand why that is right now. And if that works, which is entirely possible, saying, hey, guys, if you run us all out there and kill us all, none of y'all are going to have jobs either. You know, like, if that works, then maybe everybody sort of wins in terms of how we look at how we treat athletes, because we can all admit at this point the fundamental structure, obviously, of these industries is the free labor that comes with student athletes. But if we can convince them, hey, that's actually bad for everybody involved, and this is why, yo, man, you might have a much bigger moment than even anybody planned for when this started.
What do you think is going to be the result of whatever happens with the Pac-12? Do you see a boycott? Do you see a resolution? Are coaches going to survive like the dumbass in Washington State? And yes, I would say, I would call him that to his face, so I feel comfortable saying that on the mic, by the way.
I think that guy is probably going to lose his job. I think there will be a couple other coaches who are going to lose their jobs. And I think we're going to get a massive revisiting of what kind of human being you want coaching your football team. I really do. You know, because if we're going to take into account that football players are basically the most important people on campus in some regards, in terms of how much money they bring in terms of the type of visibility they bring to the school, and in terms of how they represent people outwardly in terms of what they wear on their chests, I think you're going to have a very different look at who's going to be leading a lot of these teams. I don't necessarily know that it means that we're going to shut down the season. I don't think the Pac-12 is going to be revolutionary in that regard. But I think this is going to be a league where you start to see guys where it's like, yeah, you're not getting by with just the regular old guy who was your old ball coach in wherever, who wants to reclaim his career at some Pac-12 school that everybody forgot even had a football team. That's not going to happen. I think you're going to see the social level of this progress a lot more in this league because of the way that the players have expressed themselves and because they don't have the same sort of cultural hurdles that the SEC does in the same way. I mean, I think the Pac-12 is going to be the most progressive football league, conference rather, in America. And I think we've seen the beginnings of that.
Clinton Yates from the undefeated Clinton. You live in Venice. LZ, pay attention, and we will talk to you very soon.
It was during the pandemic. I'm not going to apologize for not noticing moves during the pandemic.
I was at the beach yesterday, and it was glorious.
Thank you. I'm sure it was.
I'll see y'all soon.
All right, we'll talk to you again soon.
Later.
All right. The Lakers have the number one seed, but is that where you want to be right now, considering who's at the bottom? That's coming up next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. Let's all say it together right now. That's the number for Sweet James. You've been hearing me say that for a long time now because it is so important that you know what to do. If you find yourself in an accident, if you find yourself hurt in an accident, if you find yourself hurt, period, you need to have somebody that's on your side. And that is exactly what Sweet James does. That's why he's been able to collect millions for his clients over the year because, number one, he's great at it. Number two, he's looking out for you. He's making sure that you get what you need, that your needs are met, that you get what you deserve. 800-500-5200. That's Sweet James. SweetJames.com. You can do it online as well. It doesn't matter what time of the day it is, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Make that call. Get online. Tell them what's going on so they can get to work for you. And you can find out for yourself why they are the People's Accident Attorneys of Southern California. You can find out for yourself why they've been voted best attorneys in America. SweetJames.com. 800-500-5200. All right, LZ, I want to get to the Lakers and the matchup that they have tonight in a second, but I wanted to finish the thought that Clinton mentioned as we were wrapping up there. Do you think that these schools are going to start hiring different football coaches? Because I hope so. I hope that they find a different type of guy, a guy that's more in tune with the students and the student-athletes and what they want and the needs that they have. But I'm skeptical, man, because at the end of the day, the athletic departments, they want to win. They want to win games. They want to raise money. And having a guy that's a great guy that the players love is nice. But if the guy's not winning, they're going to go find a guy that can win.
Listen, man, we have discovered, and I didn't know this. I did not know this was going on. But we've now had multiple examples of coaches using the N-word with their players. Within the current instruction, within the current method in which we're hiring people. Imagine that. On a college campus where you're recruiting African-American players to help you be successful, you have men who have these young men's lives in their hands dropping the N-word in practice and not facing any repercussions. So, yes, I do believe that we are going to have some changes made. We're in a different place in this country now. And it's not because of the views of white people have changed drastically. It's because the patience of young people have changed drastically. So the old guard that is predominantly white, and I'm not making this up, you can look it up, the stats are the stats, the head coaches, the school athletic directors, the leader of conferences. These are by far and wide, these are mostly white, cisgendered, heterosexual men. running all of this. And the people that are depending on to generate this money in the two major sports, by and large, are young African-American and a few Latino men, by and large. You can't keep having this dynamic going on like this, Travis, with this age of awakening happening with young people, especially with reports of coaches telling their players, get your ass out there and play. I don't care if you got corona or not. And by the way, here's an N-bomb for you to take.
Mm-hmm.
So hell yeah, I think some stuff is going to change.
Okay, let me be the black cloud here. Dabo Swinney.
Was that a pun?
Employed. No. Dabo Swinney is still there. You know why he's there? Because he's damn good at coaching football players. He's good at it. He gets results. They win a bunch of games. I hear it's shocking.
What Dabo didn't say it.
No, I understand.
Dabo didn't say it. He didn't punish properly for it, but he didn't say it.
I hear you, but the blowback was basically non-existent, right? He said, oh, he said it. He was quoting another player, but we moved on from it. What Mike Gundy did in Oklahoma State, he's still there. He hasn't left. What Nick Rolovich did up at Washington State a couple of days ago, we'll see how it falls out. Hopefully it goes the right way, but the university didn't come out and say, hell no, he's gone. We're going to go find a new guy. I hope you're right, but all the examples that we're talking about, those guys are still there.
Well, I think a big part of the reason why has to do with the timeliness of it. So just as the quarantine has forced us to deal with certain things, the quarantine has also allowed certain things to go unchecked. You can't tell me that if the news had broken about Dabo Swinney, and if we were in regular times, that there wouldn't be visible protests on campus, that students wouldn't revolt, that you wouldn't see vigils of staff, faculty and staff being present on camera. But because no one's on campus and we're not going to be on campus, you didn't have that extra visual impetus to drive the point home. And you have to remember too, Travis, is that while it is true that what occurred and what's been reported on these campuses is big news, they're big sports news. And there are bigger stories that took up that time. They're sports news, but we were still, when Dabo Swinney information came out, the country was still having not just a handful of protests, but protests were happening all over the country every night and around the world. And that was a bigger story. And then the secondary story, of course, was the pandemic. So we didn't have the bandwidth to really drill home what was going on Clemson's campus, especially without the visual of students or faculty and staff protesting. That's why they're still there more than anything else.
Yeah, I hear you. And I want you to be right, LZ, but this feels so much.
Oh, I am. I'm wrong about the snake draft, but this one I got right.
I hope so, because I come back to Colin Kaepernick when the wind started blowing in a different direction and people's eyes were being opened for the first time, or at least certain people's eyes were being opened for the first time. Oh yeah, no, he's going to get a chance. He's still on the sidewalk, man. He's still not in the league. He still hasn't gotten a tryout. The talk has changed. He's still waiting for a call. Hasn't happened yet. And I'm under no misconceptions that let's say that the scenario that you just described was a little different. Let's say instead of in the midst of a global pandemic, and you're absolutely right. There are much larger stories other than a football coach saying something terrible that need to be prioritized. But let's say that wasn't going on. Let's say that the students at Clemson decided, hell no, we don't want this here. We don't want a coach that empowers people to say things like that, and we want to go in a different direction. And they pulled the trigger and got rid of him. Okay. Be about 4 seconds before somebody hired Dabo Swinney again. Somebody would hire him immediately. I also think that if Mike Gundy got shown the door, which, by the way, he probably should have in the moment, somebody would have hired Mike Gundy. Mike Gundy would be back. I understand that I think we'll get a little bit better versions of some of these guys, and some of these really ugly incidents may cost some guys some jobs and some opportunities along the way. But until I see them get blown out, until I see the next guy that gets hired that is not one of these guys, I'm skeptical. I don't want to be. I want to think that a new day is coming. I want to think that a guy that can be open-minded and progressive and a guy that's an advocate for his players can also win games. And there's got to be a way to find a handful of those guys or multiple handfuls of those guys to put in positions and programs that will empower his players, that will teach his players, that will lead his players, and also understands how the world works or should work or is supposed to work. I just don't know, man. I just don't. These guys are all still in these spots.
I will say this, Travis. Shortly after getting acquitted for the double homicide, O.J. Simpson was seen in restaurants being flirted with by blonde white women. You would think, out of all the people that wouldn't want to mess with that dude, blonde white women would be number one on the list.
Like, that makes sense.
You don't really, but they were still right there with O.J. And when you see stuff like that, you have to realize that there's always going to be that one. And as long as there's going to be that one, then yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Someone's going to hire Dabo as quickly as possible. Because there's always going to be that one or that two. That's not the measuring stick. The measuring stick is the overall consensus. And if the overall consensus is greater than that one, then the overall consensus is what the narrative is. And I believe that the overall narrative is going to change regardless if that person decides they're a bad guy.
I hope so. I am hopeful. I'm hoping to be wrong on this one, and hopefully sooner than later. All right. LZ, we're going to go and take our first look today at the snake draft results, because I have a feeling, or not the results, the voting, because the voting isn't over. That happens tomorrow morning. But this is the first time I've ever seen you openly concede early. So we'll take a look and see how bad it's gotten for you. That's coming up next. So, LZ, did you say this yesterday? I forget whether you said it on the air or off the air, whether it's yesterday or a couple of days ago, that after the first couple hours of the snake draft, is that kind of a wrap? Does it usually just sit there, the numbers?
Yeah, I mean, it's been my experience, you know, as a multi-time champion in both a three-man and two-person snake draft. And once, it's important that you recognize the history, Travis. There's a history.
Oh, sure.
once it settles in within those first couple of hours, typically that's the pattern. Like, the first rush to voters is usually, it's like a primary. You know, once you get going, you know, it's going to be hard for the person in third place to kind of surge ahead. You know, it's hard.
The reason I ask is because we're 3 hours into it. We still have the better part of an entire day to vote, but I'm beating you at a nearly a 3-1 clip, 72% to 29%, or 71% to 29%.
I knew going into this that you and Raj had just decided that you're going to try and do the best you can to make sure that I leave the morning show on a losing note. and it's okay. It's all right. You know, no one bats 1,000. My place in snake draft history is secure. I don't feel I need to prove myself to anyone. Essentially, this is my Jordan Washington Wizards years. That, you know, occasionally I may have a flash of greatness, but for the most part, my better years are behind me. And that's okay, because people still think I'm the GOAT.
I had a pretty good chance with the opening pick when you took Flamin' Hot Doritos. I was going to be okay. Because had you taken original Doritos or even maybe Cool Ranch Doritos, I think that may have been more of a gloat. See, what you're much better at in the snake draft than I am, just generally speaking, is you're good at knowing what the people are going to want to see. You're better at that than I am. My approach to the snake draft has been one. My scheme is flawed because I pick what I like, right? And that's not necessarily what other people like. Occasionally they'll overlap, but not always. But when you went Flamin' Hot Doritos, that's kind of a niche pick right out of the gate. I knew that I had a pretty good chance.
Well, honestly, Travis, I didn't know if I was picking for the people. I didn't know if I was picking for me. I truly, honestly, have no idea what's popping in vending machines right now. I have no idea. I don't even notice vending machines in spaces when I walk in public. Like, I have so little space for that. We have a vending machine right in our studio, and I think I've gotten those granola bars maybe 10 times in 4 years.
You know what we need to do,
So if you do the math...
We need to do. We'll do at least one more, right? So we'll do it on Friday, maybe as our last one. This is something that both you and I are well versed in. This is something that you and I both have experience in, and something that you and I share a lot of similarities in. We need to do best cocktails.
There we go. Snake draft I can get into.
Yeah, we need to do best cocktails, because that's something that you and I are both well rounded in, and we like a lot of the same things. I think that might be the walk off snake draft for the two of us, at least.
I like that. In fact, here, not only should we make that a snake draft, we should make it a snake draft throughout the entire course of the show, and we make the cocktails that we're going to pick during the course of the show.
Okay. I'm not saying no. Okay. Let me just say that. But do we really want to start
hitting? I didn't say drink them.
Oh, okay.
I didn't say drink them. See, I didn't say drink them. I just said make them. What you do with them during commercial break is entirely up to you. But if we made them, then people would know that, you know, we know what we're talking about.
Let me just throw this out at you for the first. What's the not kept it going through the night? That's a separate category. What's the earliest you've hit a martini in your life?
The earliest I've hit a martini in my life?
Yeah. I mean, have you ever had an AM martini?
Oh, God, yes. I was trying to figure out which AM was the earliest. Oh, God, yeah, I've had an AM martini. I'm trying to think. Like, I would say the earliest is probably on vacation, maybe 10:30. Like, so after, so when I'm on vacation, the first thing I like to do is get the workout in. Because I'm planning on doing damage the rest of the day. And I know once I start, I'm not stopping to go to the gym, right? So I get up, go to the gym, get that 2 hours in, get it in early. And then I have the breakfast. And after breakfast, I'm just open to wherever we can drink. And so I know for sure I've had some 10:30 martinis, because I've already worked out and had breakfast before 9:30.
Yeah, that's more aggressive than I've been. I've started early in the morning, but not martinis are kind of an early afternoon at best situation. I need the sun to at least be headed on its way down before I can start a martini. There are other options in the morning that are not that. I think you may have me beaten now. That I like this idea. We need to do that as our final draft.
Yeah, I'm not going to handcuff martinis. I'm going to set martinis free. You can be wherever you want to be, Martini. Don't let Travis put you in a corner. Nobody puts baby in a corner. Oh,
look, I think we both know what the number one pick is. And I think that who gets that number one pick, it may or may not work in your favor. We'll do that coming up later in the week. We'll see you tomorrow morning on The Morning Show, ESPN.